This week on Out of the Air features 80-year-old sculptor, mixed media artist, and spoken word performer Jake Webster, who uses poetry to inspire his art. Next, Brazilian-born abstract artist and musician Eugenio Cerossi, who returns to South Bend's 2025 for the Love of Art Fair. Our spotlight's on Valparaiso Creative Council's new Artist Hub with Executive Director Jessica Corral.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, WVLP, 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air is heard every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Also heard on Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Media. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. We'd like to welcome to Art in the Air Spotlight. She's been with us several times before, and she actually wears many hats in the arts department. But she's going to be speaking to us about the Valpo Creative Council and some exciting things they have going on down in Valparaiso. Some events, but also a brand new project that's just come up she's going to share with us. That's Jessica Corral, who's the executive director there at Valpo Creative Council. Welcome back to Art in the Air Spotlight.
Aloha, Jessica.
Hi, Esther. Hi, Larry. Always a joy for you guys to have me and to talk with you, catch up a bit.
Well, tell us about this brand new project that's, in fact, I just read the article where you just got the key to the front door of the building, but tell us all about that.
Yeah, well, if, for those of you that don't know, Valparaiso Creative Council is, you know, the roots of that is really the community demanding that there be a creative district designed and developed within downtown Valpo. So it's been since about 2017 inception and creatively just kind of morphing each year with what are we defined as, what do we look like, kind of in embryonic stages for the past 5 years. But I want to declare that we're in toddler stage. We're getting our feet underneath us. We're learning to walk. And the building's really going to be that transition period into that next stage. And it's going to allow us to basically have a place where people can come see us. You know, we've been working from the cloud, having events, promoting the arts, having different programming. But this allows us to have, you know, community members come to us and say, hey, who really are you? Let me check out your space, which is really exciting. So yeah, the key handoff was fun, Larry.
Well, that's great. And so tell us some of the things that VCC has done so far. I'm aware of it because I was able to exhibit with you guys, but tell us about like the thing for artists and for art patrons.
Yeah, you were able to exhibit with us and serve as a board member for a nice amount of time, especially during the growth period when we were defining who we are. So yeah, we do have quarterly exhibits that are featured at Roots Cafe in Lower Lincoln. That's going to continue through 2025. So we're going to be doing it's really important for anybody that wants to get information from us to send us an email at info@valpocreates.org. I'm going to be putting together a call out for artists. It's going to outline everything that's coming up in 2025 and what people can get involved in, no matter what type of art, wherever your talent lies. But aside from that, the quarterlies really allow us to just partner up with businesses, bring the art into their spaces, and also do a reception called Art and Innovation on a quarterly basis, where we bring in somebody to educate or somebody to speak about their business and their art form, or panelists. Last time we had leadership from the city, the county, and the state. And so those are just an opportunity for the quarterlies for sure. Great for anybody in the area that's an artist.
So Jessica, you talked about 2017, and I think I might be referring maybe to 2017, maybe a little before, but was that the building? And when I saw the image of your building, was that the building, like, was that at the root of everything? There were like artist events there a long time ago with, because I remember Jade was there with Pieces of Jade, and you could pre-support the artist, and then there was like an event that, is this sounding familiar at all?
No, and you know what? Okay, I don't think that was BCC related, but if anything was used in that building, there's a lot of historic, I found out and even touched base with Kevin at Poco Muse, that there's a lot of history of talented artistry all the way back to the 1890s. And so that whole area or row was actually where all the manufacturers and creators and blacksmiths and all of the just rich history of handmakers, right, was right. All along that corridor and that avenue right there. So no, this will be our first time ever being in a building. We've never had a location before. So it's a huge first step for us, for sure.
So what are those first steps? What's happening right now today?
Sure. Yeah, we have four different sections inside the building. Each one is kind of designated for different usage. So we have some arts organizations that are going to be housed within the space. They get to use it for their own purposes. And then we also have an artist hub on one side of it that's going to be giving artists access to making their own work inside a space, storing their projects there. Instead of having it be something at home that they do, we can create a kind of artistry hub. And then we'll also have a conference room, an office space for VCC to conduct our service and our board meetings. So right now it's just the bare minimum of taking a space that probably needed updates since the 70s, revamping it, opening it up to the public. And that's phase one. Phase two has a lot more involved, and that'll come later down the line, probably in about a year or so.
So you're going to have any gallery space there too? Is that going to be part of what you're going to have there?
No, not at all. We're not competing with anybody in the area that's doing that. The Valpo Artist Guild is doing such a great job themselves. And so they're right directly across the street from us. We want to bridge that gap and maybe do some networking and have pop-up events with each other. So no, we're not looking to duplicate that in any kind of way. What we're doing is going to be a new artist thumbprint for downtown Valpo that doesn't exist yet. So the details on that will kind of unfold as we develop this out further.
You mentioned having places for people to work. Will you have specific hours, or will they have keys to certain areas where they could work at their, you know, at their own pace?
Yeah, great question, Esther. No, that they'll have access to the doors. We'll have key fobs that they'll be able to access certain rooms at certain times, and we'll have a schedule so that everything can kind of rotate out. And since we haven't done this before, just learning as we go. So we're going to start small. So we're going to be doing a call out for artists. We'll probably have five as an initial starting point. Anybody that wants to support that, November 22nd is our last official day for this campaign. And anybody who does donate, it gets matched by the IHCDA. And anyone who donates $250 gets their name on our official founders wall, which is a huge perk if you want to be a supporter.
Excellent. That's Jessica Corral, Valpo Creative Council's Executive Director. Tell us about the new Arts Space. Jessica, thank you so much for coming on Art in the Air Spotlight.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you so much.
And a spotlight extra. Valparaiso's Chicago Street Theater rings in the holiday season with two productions. First with Junie B in Jingle Bells, Batman Sells. And next, The 12 Dates of Christmas, opening November 22nd, running through December 15th, directed by Donna Henry and Ashley Happer. Ticket information is available at chicagostreet.org or by email at boxoffice@chicagostreet.org. Art on the Air Spotlight and the complete one-hour program on Lakeshore Public Media is brought to you by McCauley Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker.
Hi there, this is Public Radio theme composer B.J. Lederman, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM.
We are happy to welcome Jake Webster to Art on the Air. Jake is an artist who works in many mediums, but with a focus on sculpture. He has a large personality and an appreciation for the written word and a love of music. He uses sculpture, painting, poetry, and the spoken word to reflect his belief in the importance of self-expression that speaks about his community and environment. He always begins the sculpting practice by writing poetry. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Jake. It's really wonderful meeting you.
Aloha and good to be here.
Beautiful.
Well, Jake, we always like to know about your origin story. You know, everything there was to know about Jake, but we're afraid to ask. So we'll key that up by saying how you got from where you were to where you're now. So tell us all about Jake.
I was born and raised and educated in Mississippi. I traveled the world through the Army and learning art. And I ended up in South Bend, Indiana, teaching middle school art and adult basic education. And I love to make sculpture, and I love to write poetry. But my poetry came about because when I was a kid and I didn't know how to draw or paint or sculpt, I would write down descriptions of things that I wanted to draw and paint when I learned art. And not knowing that the more I learned about art, that the old things on my mind was going to fade away and the new things was going to take over. But since I had all of this writing from the time I was about 8 years old up until the time I was high school, that we start calling it poetry. It's mainly prose. But when you get as old as I am, they say poetry to make me feel good.
So what was your childhood like? What was schooling like? Did you have any exposure to art? Was the family artistic?
No. My mother was a great cook. My father painted houses and commercial buildings. So I grew up cooking and painting houses. And I realized that painting was so difficult, I better keep my ass in school so I wouldn't have to be worried with a 60-foot ladder. And since birth, I was fascinated with pictures and words. And so I learned to read early. I learned to write early. I learned to make pictures early. And the older I got, the better I got. And by the time I was 16, I think I read somewhere that Romare Bearden had said that the older you get, the better you get. And then you get so old, you start to fade out again. So the trick is to stay till you fade out again. And that's what I'm trying to do now. But I love what I do, and I do it every day.
So when you were in school, as you progressed and you're working more on, are you drawing? Did any of your teachers see and encourage your talent?
Art has always been a struggle for me. In high school, I could draw and paint better than my teachers. Mm. So we had a little thing going there, but I didn't understand jealousy and competition because at my house, you just live. I didn't worry about it. Didn't nobody ask me to do nothing, wash dishes, you know, dress up to go to church and things like that. But other than that, I wasn't forced to do nothing. So when I got in school, I could draw and paint in both hands and left hand, right. And so they started making me draw with my right hand and right. So it was a whole lot of confusion. And so by the time I left high school, I just would draw and paint on my own because, again, I had learned somewhere that art was something you had to do. You couldn't think about it. You couldn't let nobody tell you about it. You just have to go do it. And the more mistakes you make, the better you get. And that is the truth. The more mistakes I made, the better I got. The more questions I asked, the more answers I received, the better I got. And then by the time I got to college and I met this wonderful nun, Sister Dorothy Briggs, I taught her how to cuss and she taught me how to research and make art.
Well, that's an exchange, isn't it?
Yes. When we travel over Europe together, the Vatican paid for us to come to Europe in 1974. So I got to see all of the old masters for the space they were created for, except for Michelangelo's pieces that was really made for the graveyard. But we had got them all in museum now because they were really tuned for the kings and queens and popes and things. And everybody, Sistine Chapel, everybody just fell in love with that, which I did too. But I loved his slaves, his prisoners. And I think that's when I started to become a sculptor, when I could see things and they were unfinished. They were just magnificent, and they fit perfectly into the 21st century because they are not finished.
I know. When you see it in person, you see the maker's hand in it, where in an image in the book, you don't see the actual physical work that goes into it. And it is quite a moving experience to see those sculptures in person.
It is. And Jansen, the history book, lies so much because they'll show you something in the book and it's 2x2. And the thing is really 8 feet life size. And so you can't, if you don't see it in person, then how do you know what it is from the book? Because they don't give you no scale, no reference.
Yeah, no perspective.
No perspective at all. They just turn you loose. In 74, with Sister Dorothy, I ended up in Europe studying art. And I ended up in Pietra Santa. And I went up into the marble quarry. Father Tom took me up into the marble quarry, and when I came out of the marble quarry, by the time I got back to New York, I threw my paintbrushes in the garbage can. Never wanted to paint again in my life. And when I moved to South Bend, I was really changing medium. And the Midwest is a different monster because everybody thinks somebody else is supposed to do something for you. And I was taught that if I make art, somebody would buy it. But in the Midwest, that's not true. You make art, and if it don't fit on the refrigerator with a magnet, they look at you like you're crazy. And so I tell them now, folks just have no respect for art, even in Chicago. And being Black, it really puts you at a disadvantage because all of the institutions around you are white. And they just have this superficial idea of what Black art is. And to me, I don't think Sister Dorothy taught me Black art. She just taught me art.
Right.
And all of the coloration come from the outside world and not from inside. And so I had a difficult time with the Afrocentric movement. Because I learned the Afrocentric movement, I could sell something for $300 when I wanted $300,000 for it. And they go, no, you Black, you can't sell it for $300,000. And I still have that problem today. I can give things to the museum, but the museum would never, well, they'll never come and buy. But I can give them anything, and they'll gladly come and get it and take it. So now I'm in about 6 museums and 2 sculpture gardens. And most folks have no idea what I do because I live in Elkhart, Indiana. And so when I say Elkhart, the first thing they say is Elkhart, Minnesota, Elkhart, California. And I go, I know. Elkhart, Indiana is where I live. And so
the question I had is kind of your process. I know reading your biography that poetry informs your work. So tell us about how that does. What, and again, I guess I call the kind of poetry you write is prosatry because I kind of dabbled in that myself. But, you know, tell us a little bit about your process.
Let me give you a sample.
Okay.
Sample. This is my new book, Come Talk With Me. There was a two-person show I'd done at St. Mary's College here in Notre Dame, Indiana, a year before last. And this sort of was the catalog for the exhibition. And so I took the poetry. And so I'm just picking up the first thing in the book, okay? and say, ought to move. Folks think you ought to move when you are a single mom or you are a single dad. You are living in one of those neighborhoods where everything is missing. You're working two jobs. Still, you're scraping by just to find bus fare to get from one job to the other. Where do you move to? I'm 12 years old. Don't qualify to hold a job. I'm trapped in this neighborhood that I don't control. And so that becomes a very, very piece of drawing. And I only draw with ink. And I use the figure, but I put a hole in everything I do. So picture yourself being 12 years old and somebody's telling your mama you ought to move, and you're trying to make the house payment or pay rent this month. So where do you move to? And you deal with gangs and drugs, and that's just not my neighborhood now. That could be any neighborhood in America now. You see, so now it's a problem. Long as it was my neighborhood, it wasn't a problem. But now it could be any neighborhood. And so when I make art now, those are the kind of things I like to talk about. And so I wrote this. I can make an art piece today. I can make an art piece tomorrow. I can make an art piece 100 years from now because I got this poem, you see. And I can always think of a 12-year-old trying to do something or trying to get so you don't qualify. You can't work at Burger King at 12. Can't work at McDonald's at 12. But we'll say that. And this kid is just trying to get back and forth to school in one piece. And so these are the things I love to do. And wood is my principal material. And I'd rather work 15 feet than to work 15 inches. And so that's another thing that drives Black folks crazy because I don't have nothing for $100 they can buy. So they say mine is too expensive. And I'm going, no, it's not too expensive. It's too expensive to buy a car. It's too expensive to buy a washing machine, but to buy a piece of Jake art is not too expensive. But they go get the car and the washing machine, and I keep the art.
So is it your words primarily that give you the inspiration for your piece, or can you read another person's writing and a sculpture will form and you know, but is your inspiration... Now I'm confused because I was sort of under the impression that you would write something and that would be the entry to the sculpture. But now I think I just heard, and I might have heard incorrectly, that you have the writings that you, the same writing that you go back to that then still gives you the entry to a new piece of work.
It could be your conversation we're having today. End up with a poetry or a piece of sculpture or a painting just because I feel good talking to you.
Right.
And I'm not going to waste this moment trying to make something bad out of it. I'll make something good out of it. And to help me, because I'm getting old, I'm 77 now, to help me remember, I'll write something down. I'll draw something down. And I'll think of you. I'll think of Larry. Because all of this is what fuels me to keep making art. I don't never get bored. I never had that period in my life where I was burnt out or I'd had no idea what to do. At 77, I've been making art every day.
So, to work 15 feet is a very physical, to work big is very physical,
very, very
immersive work.
Very physical. And since... being Black, my studio, I've been here 33 years, and I can count the folks that walk into my studio because they think they're going to teach me something. And when they come in, if they're white, they're going, oh, Jake, your stuff is too expensive. And if they Black, they go, oh, Jake, let me help you make $1 million on the internet. And then I go, well, what do you do for a living? They say, I ain't got a job. And then I go, maybe help me make $1 million and you don't have a job. Don't you know you got to be making $1 million to help somebody make $1 million? So they get upset with me. But I love it now. And in the old days when I was younger, I think that's why God let us come up with these cuss words. If you go to heaven, you don't need to cuss. If you inhale, cussing doesn't matter. So cussing only matters on earth. This is the only place cussing matters. And folks that are upset, they could cuss you. But I love it. And it helps me to explain myself. And kids love it because kids get what I do. Their parents say they don't get what I do. But when I start to talk about, like now, the exhibition I got coming up now, the title of it is Agony and Grief. Mm. And why would I talk about agony and grief? If we can't talk about agony and grief as artists, how can we get everyday folk to talk about agony and grief? You see, when I say to my Palestinian friends or to my Jewish friends, how do we stop fighting? How do we end dropping bombs and shooting bullets at folks? And then they say, well, Jake, how you do that in your community? And the more we say don't do it, the more we do it. So if artists don't talk about these things, who else can talk? When I talk about it, we don't have to fight. We don't have to shake our fists. We don't have to point our finger. But I will say, and that's G-O-T. Because a lot of times I say that folks, they think I'm saying something else. But I wasn't allowed to cuss when I was a kid. And then G-O-T, so I can say that. And so now, and kids, that they just love it now. And so when I teach writing, because every kid needs to read and write. I don't care how good they get on the computer. To be creative and to think creatively, you need to be able to read and write. And so when I teach reading and writing, oh, they love for me to cuss. Because they think, well, you shouldn't cuss. You need to write. When you can get a teacher, then you can cuss. If you're the teacher, don't you? And they go, you can't do that. That's not fair. The world is not fair. But the world is. And you can do this in art, and we can laugh. And that's why I walk around now with a grin, with this grin on my face. And folks, they don't know whether I'm going through a bad time or a good time. They just say, here come Jake.
So, Jake, I would like to get back to, like, the materials you use. You say you primarily like wood, but you're in Indiana, and we have limestone here. And I know you were saying you were inspired by the marble quarries in Italy. Have you used Indiana limestone?
Yes, but my studio is equipped for wood. And I do carve limestone, and I do carve aerated cement. Mm-hmm. And most folks still trying to figure out what in the hell aerated cement is. and my brickyard couldn't sell me $1 million worth at a time. Stop selling it or stop giving it away, because they would give it to me because they just thought it was funny that I could take something laying out on the brickyard there for the last 20 years and nobody had no use for it. And then all of a sudden, I had some use for it. So now they done changed up. And so I don't even know where I'm going to find aerated cement now. And that's cement impregnated with air. So it becomes fireproof and soundproof right away. And it's expensive stone. It was made during the 30s, I think, 30s and 40s, to replace the brick cylinder block. Mm. But it was so expensive, and I think it had about a 30-story limitation with it for height-wise, and folks would start going up 60 stories, 102 stories, and so aerated cement sort of got phased out, and so you have to be lucky when you go to a brickyard and you find some there. I tried ordering it up from online, but they can't never pay. Never sell me what I want. They always have a product that's similar. And when the product is similar, it's not what you're looking for. And so I carve in there a limestone, but I'm still limited to a ton. And I think with a 3-ton cherry picker, a motor lift, I can move around the studio because it's just me. And I have to be able to sculpt at 3 o'clock in the morning when nobody is here.
Right.
But me, you know, and they said, well, the one piece that I carved on a piece of tulip wood. And I say tulip wood because I want $300,000 for it instead of poplar. Everybody knows poplar, but it's the tulip tree. But it's a 3-ton piece of wood, and it took me 14 years to carve it. But now it's on display now at the Jewel Vincento Sculpture Park up in Smithburg, Maryland. And when I finished, the guy called. He said, "Jake, what you gonna do with it?" I said, "I'm done with it." And he showed up the next day to take it up to the sculpture park.
Wow.
And then we start arguing over money. And he just, like, "I'm not paying you nothing because I ain't got no money." But he had this 2 miles of park going up in Smithburg, Maryland, that he just wonderful friend. He took all 2 years and built a Frank Lloyd Wright style house that people come from all over the world now to live there, because it's a bread and Airbnb now. But we go, I'm going to go out there in November just to see how they got it mounted, but they done mounted it in the park and everything. And so I got that. And then here in Elkhart, things just too big to fit in the studio. There's a family here that has taken care of me for the last 30 years. Live up on the river, have a nice yard. So we take everything up and put in their yard that don't fit. And so I don't have to worry about selling. And that's why, I mean, museums will take things, but they won't buy nothing. And then everybody around here thinks somebody in Chicago should do something. And folks in Chicago tell me to go to hell. They got enough folks in Chicago to deal with.
Well, Jake, we are almost out of time. And I want to give you a chance for you to tell how people get in touch with you, your website, and anything like that.
Well, if you Google Jake Webster, something will show up about 2,000 different ways. My website is Jake Webster, Jake Webster II, and that'll take you to my website. And I always have new things. I'm always putting new things on my website, and I'm learning how to develop it myself so I can change it. Some things on there now is not up to my standard, but I'm going to go back as soon as I finish this exhibition, and I'm going to put new stuff on and change things around. But you can Google me, Instagram, Facebook, and you see my friends are helping me become computer savvy. During the virus, I took 2 years to learn how to use the computer. And so my new book, Come Talk With Me, I self-published it myself, because I got tired of folks telling me what I could and could not do.
Right.
And I wasn't paying nobody no $20,000 to publish my prose.
Well, Jake, we appreciate you coming on Art of the Air. That's Jake Webster, sculptor, mixed media artist, spoken word performer, and also author. You can find his website at jakewebsterstudioii.com, and he's also on Facebook as JW Studio II. Jake, thank you so much for coming on Art of the Air and sharing your art journey.
Thank you so much.
Thank you all for inviting me. And anytime, you see, I love to talk because I spend so much time in the studio by myself.
Hi, this is Rob Quick, author of Finding Your Voice with Radio, Audio, and Podcast Production. And you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media 89.1 FM and on WVLP 103.1 FM.
We would like to welcome Eugenio Gerosi to Art on the Air. Eugenio is a self-taught painter who was born in Brazil and has been in the U.S. for 24 years. He works primarily in acrylics and oils in what has been described as abstraction with depth and movement. He also is a classical pianist, music teacher, and collector of abstract and cubist art. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Eugenio. It's very nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you both. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Well, like we like to do with all of our guests on the show, we'd like to find out their origin story. And our audiences usually just love to hear that. So tell us about how you got from where you were to where you are now.
Sure. So I was born in São Paulo, Brazil. My parents are from Italy. So with that said, we did a lot of traveling. We moved a lot and we experiment a little bit of everything. But I had an opportunity to come to New York City to study. And became New York, United States became home since then. I finished school, lived in New York City for a long time, then Palm Springs, Key West, Florida, and then finally Louisville. It's been 10 years now.
So was it school that brought you to New York?
Correct. Yes. I went to school. I went to the NYU as an opera singer. And then I had the chance to study a little bit at the Juilliard, and then I switched to Juilliard. And after Juilliard, a lot of things happened, and then I eventually changed my major from opera to piano. And evidently, I was not at the level for Juilliard for piano, so I ended up going to another school in California, California State University, and then I ended up having my degree there. And that's pretty much it.
Well, so what was your childhood like? Were your parents artistic? What did the moving bring into your life? So were you going between Brazil and Italy, or?
Right. So we spent a lot of time of traveling, during summertime. I primarily was born and raised in Brazil, but we traveled a lot. Mom was a professional accordionist, and she played for a long time. And my dad was an architect. So I have been exposed to art, you know, since day one, and they were very, enthusiastic about everything that I did, artistic speaking. And thanks to them, I am what I am right now.
So growing up as an Italian-based parents in a Portuguese-speaking area, what did you speak at home? And then did you also speak Portuguese, or did you come with a lot of other languages? Because I always find that very fascinating, is that kind of background.
Very interesting, because, they spoke Portuguese, evidently, and also Italian, but they would speak in Italian with me, but I always would answer in Portuguese. And later on, of course, I regret, because I can understand much better than I can speak these days. But I guess that's the way, I was raised, a little bit embarrassed about, the Italian language. I don't know why that's a beautiful language, but that's how it happens. So they would speak in Italian sometimes, primarily my grandparents, most often. And then I would answer in Portuguese.
And they would understand you?
Sure. Yeah. They understand me.
I mean, and this is getting off the subject a little bit. How close is Italian to Portuguese terms? I know it's a Romance language, or is it?
Right. So it's actually, in terms of structure, it's very close. It's there are a total of five Romantic languages, Portuguese, Spanish, Italian, French, and Romanian. And so in terms of a structure, verbs in verbs tense, it's very similar. Pronunciation might be a little different, but Italian and Portuguese, it's very similar. And interestingly, once you learn a language, is one thing to be able is to be able to communicate in that language, and the other thing is to be able to use properly that language. And that involves the cultural or colloquial language and all the things. So interesting that Italian and Portuguese, there's a not only the language is very similar, but also our culture is very similar. And primarily because we had about 500,000 Italians that went to Brazil at one point. Mm. And so São Paulo culture is very Italian. So still these days, there's a lot of influence. So language and the culture is very close to each other.
So with a father as an architect, that's very technical. What were right. your first art experiences? Were they more, because now you're abstract, which you've, right. What was the evolution? What was what were you like as a child? What was the household like artistically with all this,
Good question. I started playing the flute. That's very early, even before elementary school. My mom gave me this flute. Said, "Here's a flute," and I was very curious. and I start playing. So I had that experience, and then I then ended up playing in a little TV show. You know, once a month, I was playing that little show, TV show for kids. So I started there, and then I eventually became a ballet dancer. And I did ballet for a long time, and I absolutely love it until, you know, puberty happened. And then I felt just a little odd and I regret until these days. But I always did something. Then, you know, singing and then playing instruments. I had accordion in the house, a little bit of violin. It's just like became like my kind of thing, you know. I don't recall one specific thing that I was exposed, but I've been exposed to a lot of things. And I think that's what guided me through the process to be where I am now, because of being exposed to so many different things.
At what age were you doing opera?
I started at 14, probably around 14. And I did a lot of choirs. So I had choirs, and we kind of developed a taste for music, you know, for opera with a choir. But I started singing maybe a little early, you know, in church, of course. But opera became more resonated more with me around 14, 15.
And so I'm just trying to, so you started with flute, and when did piano get introduced? I'm just trying to build this like map of,
I know,
you know, because
I know
this is a lot of wonderful experiences. And
thank you. Yeah, I know it can be confusing too, but I think, you know, so it's kind of confusing, but also somehow connected. You know, art is very, very diverse, but it's also requires a lot of sensibility, emotion, and feelings towards it. You know, so yeah, I always loved piano. I think my family knew that, but they couldn't afford a piano back then. And then since I didn't have a piano, I didn't even probably know how piano was important in my life till later on. So I pretty much played with whatever I have around, you know. It was,
I know, because it's quite interesting. Your mom played the accordion, right? But
right.
She handed you a flute. So yeah. I was just trying to get a picture of whether the house was filled with all these musical instruments or.
Pretty much, yes. We had accordion. I played the accordion too, but not, you know, good. We had flute. We had, I did have a little piano, like a baby piano that I could just literally grab the piano to my sidewalk to take with me. But yeah, so whatever we had available, you know, that's back in the days, you didn't have cell phone, you didn't have computers, so you played whatever you had at home.
Sure.
So with music, what is your life in music? And we'll explore your actual visual art, but what do you do with music now in your life?
So I am a public school teacher, and I currently teach a high school, and I teach piano. We have a class that's called Piano Lab, and also I am the choir director of my school, a local school in Louisville, Kentucky. So I have private students, piano students, and that's pretty much what I do with the music,
right,
in my spare time.
In your spare time. And
right.
Do you do any outside performing outside of the teaching?
Not anymore. So I do have a little performing here and there, but not like a professionally speaking.
No choir anymore?
I don't sing in choir. My choir do perform, we perform basically, you know, small school activities.
Sure.
It's very interesting that high school students do not want to be part of choir these days anymore. You know, it's just I don't have a huge choir, unfortunately, but we do perform during Christmas and end of the school year.
So when do you make time for your own art practice?
I start working at 7:15. I get up at 4 o'clock so that I can have time to practice the piano. But that's usually when I practice, early in the morning, and then take that out of my shoulder. Ready to go.
As you know, as we look through your body of work, you have a lot of paintings. Right. So I'm just trying to figure out your day to day and your practice. So the piano and they both take a lot of time, painting and piano.
Sure. However, with piano, it's because I play classical. Classical piano is very structured, right. And when you play, your job as a pianist is to play exactly as it has been written, you know, and most of the compositions were written by composers that were, prodigies, and they were like showing off their skills. Oh, I can do this. You can't. So when you were playing the piano, classical piano, your job is to be very close, if not exactly precise, the way the composer wrote. However, with the painting is just like my freedom, because I can just sit down and look at my colors and follow my mood without much of a structure. You know, there are certain structure that you have to follow, but it's very freedom. It's like my therapy, where I can just sit down without no pressure, no commitment, and just, have the time, the colors, the palettes, and everything.
Compose in a different way.
Yeah, it's just like it's my free time.
You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, on WVLP, 103.1 FM. Well, does your music infuse your art in any way? And then we'll talk more about your art, but does having this classical music, does that kind of give you visualizations of what you want to paint?
Sure. Especially, with abstract, you start listening to composers like Debussy, you just have the images in your brain all the time. So definitely music has a huge impact in my career as a painter, but also in my life as an individual, definitely.
I guess that means I'm going to have to ask the question, what do you play music while you paint? And
I listen to, I don't play, but
well, yeah.
I do listen.
No,
to
I
music.
Mean, listen, I'm sorry. I should have qualified that. Yeah. Do you listen?
Yes, I do. I listen a lot of different genres, not necessarily classical, but I listen to other genres as well, just to, it's my free time. It's my me time. I take advantage. Sometimes I listen to podcasts. Sometimes I, most of the time I listen to music, but there are days also that I feel like being quiet in an environment that I don't have any sound that will be, the moment what I'm working on at the moment.
So. It's so interesting. So let's say you're walking up to the canvas. Do you have like a color that you're going to start with in your mind, or how do your paintings come about?
That's a good question. I do have a palette. And that is related to my mood. I, depending how I feel, I put bright colors and I have them all next to me. And then even if I don't determine, I always go to them specifically. But if I am in a more introspective and more, introspective mood, yes, that would be, using colors more, less hot, more
right,
suiting,
more, muted.
More suiting. Yeah. So definitely the palette is my guidance.
So when you pick your palette, now I noticed like on your website and just scanning through it, you have various things like you have depth and movement, tension, you have subtleness, and then you have very vibrant or dramatic colors. So what when you approach it, like Esther said, what would you decide, okay, this is going to be a dramatic day, or no, this is going to be a subtle day? How do you decide that?
And I guess that is part of the feeling that you get from certain composers, just like a Franz Schubert having all this drama in his life, and he's very moody, and you can hear, the struggles or in the happiness in the same piece of music And you have that.
Do you shift moods within your painting? Sometimes you start out one way and then it completely goes in a different direction.
Sure. My brain never stops. It's almost like I'm painting, but I'm also processing information. And it depends the moment. You know, you can be a little bit more happy or sad. It's definitely, yes.
Yeah, so the dramatic paint piece that you have, like on your website, I assume that you might have been listening to Beethoven during that.
Probably so. I love Beethoven a lot.
Yeah.
Very dramatic, yes. But one thing that is very interesting is that for me, people ask, when do you feel that your piece is concluded, is finished? And it's a very interesting feeling that I have. And maybe not rational, but it really works for me. I literally feel when the painting is not done. And I do feel when the painting is done. And I can't really explain the words, but it's just like a connection of feeling and in creation.
It's almost like a disconnection when it's done, you know? It's just like that energy flow is gone.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right.
Is there a kind of art that you have not done that you would like to do? I mean, you're doing abstracts and using both oil, acrylics, and on gesso board. Is there something that, you know, I really like to do? What is that?
I would like to do sculptures. And I really would like to get into a sculpture one day. That is in my bucket list.
Did you do the light that's to your, on the side of you? Did you create that light?
I did not create this light. I should take the compliments because a lot of people ask that, but I did not.
It has that your energy.
Thank you. That is another, actually my spouse did the light. So we kind of have the same energy, I would say.
yeah, I would say it's really lovely.
Thank you. There's another one that he also made. It's right here. That's God art.
Wow.
I don't know if you can see.
And you just showed us on your camera some of the pieces that looked a little less abstract that were on the wall. Are those yours or are those someone else's?
No, this is some artists that we collect from all over the world. That is specific. I think that's the one you're probably talking about, this one. She's an American artist. But that one is a guy from Cuba, Abreu. He's a very, Luis Abreu is an excellent painter from Cuba. So yeah, we have several things here.
Looks fantastic.
It's inspiring.
Thank you.
So we talked about what you may want to do, like sculpture. But what do you do for your own enjoyment away from piano and your work? What do you, what's enjoyable for you in life?
I love spending time with my family. I love spending time with my dogs. And I sleep sometimes too.
Recreational sleeping. That's good.
Right. But I'm always doing something, you know, it's just, that's my character, I guess.
So I want to, what kind of sculpture are you interested in making?
Oh, sure.
Creating?
Certainly. It's certainly something more, you know, abstract kind of type.
What materials though, are you, when you think about it, what materials are you gravitating toward?
Well, fiberglass would be something fascinating, you know, with all the dangers that, you know, related to fiberglass.
Yes.
But just get a nice set of masks and go for it. But definitely fiberglass, and also, you know, using painting from an automobile in fiberglass is usually goes good. So something like that.
Wow.
Do you have any projects coming up in the near future? Things that maybe people can find out?
Yeah, I have a show coming up in February that will be the show called For the Love of Art in South Bend. This is going to be my second year, and it's going to happen in February 1st and 2nd to 2025. And this is going to be my second time there. Last year was my first year, and I was awarded the best in show.
Right. So, and that's how we connected. Shireen gave us your information. So.
Oh, that's right.
That's right. So that's how we got connected. Yeah. And I did stop by the show and see it. So, but yeah, we're going to have several of the artists on from For the Love of Art Fair in February. And we're going to do a quick spotlight with Shireen. But yeah, it's a great place to have an indoor art fair so you don't have to worry. And then you're right next to the South Bend Museum. So it's a great place.
Absolutely. Yes. And Notre Dame's, if you are to this one.
Right.
It's a good place, good show, definitely.
Well, we're getting to our final minute here. We want to give you a chance how people can find you on social media, everything, and how to reach out to you if they may be looking for an abstract commission.
Sure. I use Instagram or Facebook under the same name. My name, Eugenio Gerossi, and I'll spell that is EuGenioCerrosi. So that would be through Instagram or Facebook, but also you can reach out through my website, which is artisteugeniocerrosi.art.
That sounds perfect. Great. And we'll have a link on our website where your picture is so it can link directly to that. Hey, we appreciate you coming on Art in the Air. That's Eugenio Cerrosi. He's an artist, and he'll be at the For the Love of Art Fair in the early part of February 1st and 2nd, and part of the whole group that's going to be here second year there. Thank you so much for coming on Art in the Air and sharing your art and music journey.
Yeah,
my pleasure.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
We'd like to thank our guests this week on Art on the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Art on the Air is also heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. If you have a smart speaker like Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant, or Apple Siri, just tell to play Art on the Air to hear the latest episode. Our spotlight interviews are heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Media. Thanks to Tom Maloney, Vice President of Radio Operation for Lakeshore Public Media, and Greg Kovach, WVLP's Station Manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. We'd like to thank our current underwriters for Lakeshore Public Media, Macaulay Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker. And for WVLP, Walt Reitinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art in the Air. We rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art in the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. You'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or send us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart.